Yesterday was a beautiful day, and I got on my bicycle, and I rode down to the Veterans Administration in Westwood, Brentwood, and rode through the administration. That's my old hood. And when I was a kid, it was closer to a hood than it is now. It has been gentrified, I think is the term. When I was a child, there were veterans on San Vicente Boulevard who would crawl under the fence and climb over the fence and roll in wheelchairs and hobble on canes to some of the beer bars along the strip of San Vicente Boulevard. There were some who were terribly, terribly wounded, mutilated. Some had parodies of what we would consider to be the modern prostheses, just terrible, terrible things to look at. They all seemed so old. Of course, as a kid, anybody seemed old. The veterans of Korea even seemed old, and they were only 10 years older than I or 12 years older than I. The World War II veterans and those ancient and wounded souls from World War I. Both out of a sense of courtesy that my parents taught me, but I think in a deeper sense because of my own sense of embarrassment, I would avert my eyes from the wounded, from those with all of those exterior marks of what the war and the wars had done to them. There were also frequenting those beer bars people with internal wounds, wounds that didn't necessarily show on the surface except when they stumbled and not from a physical war imagery or injury, when they slurred and not because of a physical wound but because of trying to use alcohol to anesthetize and stifle the demons within. It was very clear in some ways that the cost of war is borne not simply by those who die, but those who participate, those who kill, those who suffer losses and see their own friends wounded and destroyed. War leaves terrible scars within human beings. I dismounted my bike and walked into the cemetery. And the cemetery was every gravestone and every marker had a little American flag. And it's easy to be overwhelmed by the number of stones. You look at these what's called stone gardens and you just see numbers that are beyond human imagining. You can't take the pain of one loss of one person and multiply it by the thousands of graves. So I stopped, and I walked slowly and looked at the headstones and at the markers. I looked, some of them had crosses that were in relief on them. Others had stars of David. Some had no particular religious identification. I looked at the names, and the names were like one of those World War II movies. It was Gonzalez and Johansson and Green and Bernstein and Fong and Nishida and all of the various ethnicities that make up America and how unimportant those ethnicities are to those whose hopes and dreams and loves and enthusiasm sleep together in the dust in a fraternity of the dead. Wars are, of course, terrible things. Sometimes they are tragic, necessary acts of futility. Tragic is self-evident. When we kill each other, it is a tragedy. That it is sometimes necessary seems to be almost self-evident that there are times when passive resistance and just being good and holy is not enough to stop some people who have been riled up and het up over differences that someday won't make a difference. And that's part of the futility of it all. That's part of the terrible futility of war. We are so excited and angry and fearful at times when we have leaders, and by we, I mean all of humanity, we are not different DNA, when we have leaders who can play upon our fears, and that's, I'm not just speaking of America, I'm speaking of people who do want to kill us. And we don't know what to do. And we react as human animals react, with fight or flight, with fear, with anger, with rage, with patriotism, with an entire mix of mixed emotions that bespeak the terrible, terrible choices that we have to make. It's important to know the costs. It's important to know the costs of war when it is necessary, when it is tragic. And it's also important to know just how ephemeral so many of our arguments, so many of our wars are. The conditions that people find to be important, to be life and death, can seem as absurd 50 years later, 100 years later, as anything. I remember another cemetery. I was on a train in Tunisia when I was doing my Peace Corps service, and there was a young German couple, and they were trying to make themselves understood to the conductor and speaking neither French nor Arabic. They were having a difficult time, so I engaged them and I did some translating for them, and the young man said that he was in Tunisia looking for the grave of his father, who had been killed in World War II, obviously fighting for the German side. And that cemetery was located not far from where I lived, and I invited them to spend the night at my house and to try to take them there in the next day and to guide them to that grave. They were a very interesting couple. They were both studying for the ministry in Germany, for the Evangelische Freikirche. And they were lovely and warm and sensitive and just terrific human beings. I took them to the cemetery, and this cemetery had some things that you don't, or at least didn't normally find in American military cemeteries at the time, and that is almost every gravestone was decorated with a picture, a photograph of the decedent, of the dead soldier. It was put into, well, almost like a paperweight, into glass so that the elements wouldn't destroy it, and attached to the shadiest part. And I walked through there seeing not just names, not just a German Nazi cemetery, I saw these children, these boys who had killed and died before they ever lived. We found the grave of his father, and we stood, the three of us, embracing in tears at the pain, at the poignancy, at the loss. And it, of course, struck me that I could not have imagined myself 48 hours earlier crying at the grave of a Nazi soldier. But there are no Nazis. There are no communists. There are no capitalists. There are no Jews and Christians and Muslims and Arabs in the grave. They are losses, are human losses, and it is the price of our national incompetency. War has always been defined as a failure of diplomacy. War is never a triumph. It is always some kind of failure. also in Tunisia at the very same time. There was Mike, who was a Marine embassy guard. Mike used to come and stay at our house about once a month, and some of the other Marine embassy guards also came. We were kind of the unofficial club because we had a house on the ocean, and which didn't hurt. I mean, I did suffer for my country, I want you to know. Didn't have a car, didn't have a refrigerator, didn't have a telephone, but I did have a house on the ocean. And Mike and the Marines would hang out at over weekends when they were off. And Mike was 18 when he went over to Vietnam with his squad, and he had the Tontine, the survivor's prize. They had all signed a $20 bill, and he had it. At 21, he was the last one alive. Mike woke up every night he stayed with us, sometime screaming. When I came back to the States, I was part of the anti-war movement, partially because of the futility, partially because of the politics, partially because of the cost that I saw in my friends, the Marines, who had all volunteered, who had all gone over there, risked their lives, been wounded physically or spiritually, and I could not just stand idly by, because silence is consent. I participated in peaceful anti-war demonstrations. I did draft counseling, which is kind of anti-draft counseling, trying to help people find a way out. But I never called any of our returning soldiers names. Never spat at returning volunteers or draftees. Never called them baby killers. They were babies. They were babies who hadn't had a chance to live, to decide, to make informed choices and consent. That's the reason why we take them so young. On this Memorial Day, the military deaths this week, as reported in the Times, note the names and note the ages. David Christoph Jr., 25, Ohio. Lee Hamilton Deal, 23, Louisiana. Stephen Freund, 20, Pittsburgh. Michael Hermanson, 21, Fargo. William Lusink, 21, Iowa. Christian Longworth, 26, Newark. Kevin A. Lucas, 20, Greensboro, North Carolina. Caleb Lufkin, 24, Knoxville, Illinois. Robert Posio, the third, 22, Sherburn, Minnesota. Benito Ramirez, 21, Edinburgh, Texas. These are children. These are our children, all of them. And they are sent to kill other children and sent to die over issues that are important. Sometimes one does have to fight, but it is so critical to keep things in perspective. How many of you have English ancestors? Well, I'm sorry about that revolution that we fought against you guys. It was really kind of a civil war because it was the English fighting the English. The tax on tea today is higher than it was under King George, and most of the people in this room still speak English. What was that about? Kind of feel like I should apologize for that. Not all wars are critically necessary. How many of you were German ancestry? Well, we fought a war. Was it with you? Was it with your ancestors, your cousins? Or was it with a regime, a government? policies and leaders can whip people up into frenzies and create a kind of psychosis and madness that makes fighting inevitable, but it doesn't make it intrinsically important about the people. How many of you are a Catholic background? Oh, you can raise your hands higher than that. This isn't. I'm not gonna pick on you. There's not gonna be communion. You don't have to light any candles. It's okay. Well, I'm not quite sure what that Reformation thing was about either. How many from Protestant backgrounds? I thought we might have some. You feel uncomfortable sitting with these Catholics? Didn't think so. Anybody from Jewish background here? Thought we'd have a Jew or two. Got any problems with these Protestants and Catholics? Yeah, half a hand, I know. Just raise your hand a little bit. Have any problems sitting together today as Germans, as Jews, as Americans, as English, as Protestant, as Catholic? The things that seem so important, almost like the fights that we have with our children, our parents, and our spouses, fade after the adrenaline has left our system. But so often, while that adrenaline is running high, and it can run high for years, we kill and we die. And we cause in our own lives untold suffering. I left the cemetery yesterday swearing that I would not avert my eyes again from all of the mixed feelings that I have, the sense of pride of nation. I am moved by our flag. And every time I do a military funeral, or a funeral for somebody who served in the military, I tell the person from the mortuary that they're not making the flag presentation, I am. Because it is moving to me to say that the Congress in the United States has authorized me to give this flag in gratitude, in thanksgiving, on behalf of a grateful nation, to your loved one who served at the call of the nation. That's moving to me, because we do have a social contract to listen, to respond, also to think, not simply to respond blindly, but that's why we draft and have an economic draft of young people. But I won't avert my eyes in silent consent for any of the outrages. We should not spend and spill blood easily. We should not simply be patriotic and honor the people who participated in our wars, who gave the last full measure of devotion while they're over there, and forget them when they come back here, and break our promises in terms of health care, and break our promises in terms of psychiatric care, and break our promises in terms of education. And that's what we do across the political spectrum. There is no left-right liberal-conservative breakdown in how far we break down and go back on our promises to our veterans. We need to honor them in life and not simply in death. We need to honor their service and their courage and their sacrifice. We cannot avert our eyes from the pain. We shouldn't avert our eyes from the pride that we may feel in the people who have chosen to wear the uniform of this nation. I swore I would see clearly, but I want to tell you that it is hard through the tears. The tears that I was weeping as I got back on my bike and rode past endless markers of stone gardens that cover up the dreams and the hopes and the lives and the sacrifices and the pain of so many of our children and they are the tip of the iceberg of the pain of so many parents, so many lovers, so many brothers and sisters throughout the world who pay and continue to pay the price of that madness that is war.